Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. In these programs, we present new information or new insights about old and new health issues. We consider everything from community efforts to improve and extend healthcare to all people, to environmental issues that threaten us all, and to discussions with those individuals and their ideas that can move us forward in the search for health. Today's program, we'll be hearing from Dr. Walt Dawson. He's the Director of Research and Analytics at the Oregon Healthcare Association. He spoke recently to a seminar at Oregon State University, sponsored by the Public Health Department. He earned a doctorate at the University of Oxford in social policy with a focus on long-term services and support policy. His main interest is in health services required by disabled people and elderly people. In this lecture, he talks about services in Canada compared to the U.S.
Welcome, everybody. I'm very happy to be here. And so I'm going to be talking a little bit about my Fulbright experience in Canada. I was in Canada this last semester for about 4 months, looking at long-term service and supports policy. But before I kind of get into my presentation and talking about my actual research, I wanted to go over a little bit of what I'm actually going to talk about today. So I might give you a little more information about my background because I think that'll help give you a better understanding of why I chose to do this particular project. I might talk a little bit about the Fulbright program as well, an overview of kind of long-term service and supports here in the U.S. and kind of how that compares with Canada, and then talk a little bit more about my research and some observations from what I saw. So about my background, I've been interested and have worked at kind of the nexus of aging and health policy most of my life. I started out as, first of all, as a caregiver for a family member that had Alzheimer's disease and went on to be kind of an advocate for persons with Alzheimer's and dementia, doing a lot of kind of policy advocacy, worked as a staffer at the Oregon State Legislature, and then worked actually on Capitol Hill as a staffer for the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. And I mention my time on Capitol Hill particularly because it relates somewhat to this research. This research kind of builds upon my doctoral research, and I received a fellowship while I was starting my doctoral studies to work on Capitol Hill. It placed me at the Senate Special Committee on Aging, and this was early 2009, just as the Affordable Care Act was being marked up and debated, and had the opportunity to work on a few provisions of it, but also watch it firsthand and kind of used a piece of the Affordable Care Act called the Community Living Assistance Services and Supports Act, which I'm sure most people haven't heard about, but it was a program designed to provide a public financing system for long-term care. Basically, for long-term services and supports. But the federal government kind of decided that it was inoperable as designed, and it was actually repealed, and is the only section of the Affordable Care Act that has actually been repealed. And ironically, it was on the day I defended my doctoral dissertation, so, which is always fun. So I did all this research for my doctoral dissertation on how public policy is made and how long-term service and supports policy is designed at the federal level in the United States. And so I kind of wanted to do a national comparison possible between the Canada and the United States, kind of building on that and do a U.S.-Canadian comparison. So that was the motivation for doing this. So a little bit about the Fulbright program. It is a professional and educational exchange for individuals here in the United States as well as people in other countries to spend some time either teaching, researching, or perhaps graduate studies, or teaching English as a second language, or even doing certain very focused projects. Right now there's about 160 countries that participate in the Fulbright program, sponsored by the U.S. Department of State. Long-term care, or long-term service and supports, there's kind of two different terms, but I just want to give you some definitions here as we start off. So I'm going to define long-term care as a continuum of services and supports that bridges healthcare, social services, and housing to really support the needs of people living with chronic health conditions or disabilities that really affect their activities of daily living. Long-term services and supports, I think, is the more modern term, but use them interchangeably. So here in the U.S. and here in Oregon specifically, there are several different kind of care settings on this continuum of care. The most institutional, I suppose, setting, and probably the setting that often comes to mind, is nursing facilities or nursing homes. This is care provided to individuals that have very complex high needs and in a very institutional setting. Kind of further down the continuum, you have assisted living and residential care facilities. There's also 24-hour care and a building in which someone may live, but it's at a much lower level of care than nursing facilities. We also have adult foster homes here in Oregon, which are very small, like single homes where up to five people can live and receive care in those settings. But the vast majority of people actually receive services in-home, and that may be paid, and in that sense, like an agency that you pay to come in and provide services, or, again, the mass majority of this is actually provided to family and friends. And really, over 70% of all services are provided in-home by family and friends rather than in a more kind of community or institutional setting or by a paid agency. Now, in Canada, the terminology is slightly different on some of the settings. Nursing facilities are called long-term care homes, certainly in Ontario. And I should mention, Ontario is actually where I spent most of my time. Ontario, kind of the largest province in Canada by population, nearly 50% of the Canadian population lives in Ontario. I was at McMaster University, which is just outside of Toronto, in Hamilton. So by being placed there, I spent most of my time really kind of looking at how the Ontario long-term service and support system works and how policies have come together there. Just a quick overview of long-term care in the United States. There's approximately 12 million Americans who need some sort of long-term service and supports on any given day. The vast majority of these individuals are over the age of 65, well, about 60%. The estimates kind of vary, but there is a significant number of individuals who actually are under the age of 65. And actually, I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say that most people under the age of 65, or the majority of that under 65 population, probably falls between the ages of 50 and 65, but just want to make sure that this is an issue, highlight that this is an issue that affects people of all ages potentially. Again, this is individuals with kind of multiple chronic health conditions. That might be Alzheimer's or dementia, it might be diabetes, it might be someone who's suffered the effects of stroke, for example, as well. But the kind of common theme is you really require some sort of assistance with really your activities of daily living. And activities of daily living is a term that actually probably should be defined as well. It is things that you really need to be able to function and live, such as the ability to eat, go to the bathroom, mobility, and so forth. So I think it's also really good to explain why long-term care or long-term service and supports are a public policy issue. And there's kind of a lot of different reasons why, but I'll give you four reasons. First is the demographic shifts that are afoot in most developed countries of the world. This is certainly true in the United States. Our population is aging at the moment, largely a product of the baby boom generation reaching retirement age. But given that growth of that population, it's certainly important to kind of think about this from a policy perspective much more intently, I think, than perhaps attention has been given to it so far. Secondly is kind of the evolving role that gender plays in caregiving. Historically, women certainly have been the main caregivers in the home, and now that you certainly have today equal participation rates in the workforce of men and women, it raises the question of who is actually going to be providing care in a home setting. And then related to that, family structure, we are tending to have fewer children. So children have often been kind of the natural caregivers for aging parents. Also, families are much more spread apart. You may be lucky enough to live in the same town as your parent, but you may live in another state or on the other side of the country or in another country, for that matter. But I think most importantly is the role that public funding plays in long-term services and supports, and that really makes it a public policy issue and makes it an issue worth exploring further. And then I think it's also good to explain why the U.S. and Canada make for good comparison. The first, again, is that demographic change that I talked about a few seconds ago. Both populations are experiencing this like aging demographic profile. Canada's slightly further ahead on this path than we are. I think approximately 16% of the Canadian population is over the age of 65 at the moment. Secondly, our shared cultural and historical ties between the two countries, that often makes for a good understanding of the ideological, perhaps, underpinnings of policy decisions. And then also just the fact that there are a large number of dual citizens who are American and Canadian. And that's probably something that doesn't often come to mind. And so thinking about the way the policies work in one country is also certainly important to the other. And then also the way that the political system in the countries are both set up. In the United States, we are a federal political system where you have the U.S. federal government at the national level that has a significant impact on public policy. But you also have state governments that have a significant role, particularly in health and long-term service and supports policy. And this is also largely true in Canada, that you have a federal national government, but also provinces that play a significant role in long-term care and in health. The main kind of questions, my research question that I went with when I went up to Canada was, what are really the key drivers of Canadian social policy? And those specifically relating to the financing of long-term service and supports. And then more specifically, since I was based in Ontario, what are those drivers within the province of Ontario? And this kind of informed the questions that I would ask during my interviews. My previous research here in the United States had been based on three theoretical frameworks. The first being an ideological or cultural thesis, if you will, that in the United States there's a pervasive belief of anti-statism being like a distrust of the state and of the government. And then the fact that there's a strong faith that the private market or even families or religious institutions might take care of any social needs that might arise. Certainly that's not entirely true. I mean, we have lots of government programs and public involvement in lots of different social issues. I mean, you just have to think quickly that you have, you know, Social Security that provides retirement benefits to millions of Americans, and Medicare, which provides acute medical care to basically everyone over the age of 65. But it's still an important component of the policy discussion of politics in this country. So I wanted to look at that as well in Canada, how ideology tends to impact policy outcomes. Secondly, the political institutions themselves. So again, with the federal government, you have all these veto points, right, or points where policy may be stymied. So, you know, you have the separation of powers between Congress, the presidency, and the courts. It makes it difficult for large-scale social policies to be enacted. That is also something I kind of wanted to explore and look at how that has an impact in Canada. Does the structure of their political system work differently, and does that really have a impact on long-term service and supports particularly? And then thirdly, political actors or stakeholders. You know, who are the main interest groups within the system that tend to have a stake in a particular policy outcome, and how they try to navigate the political system to shape public policy? I've tried to look at in Canada as well. A little bit about the research design and the methods that I took to the research. This was purely a qualitative study. I carried out approximately 25 interviews with people that worked, I would call them policy or political leads, people that worked either in government in some way or had formerly been in government, academics and researchers who might be policy specialists, particularly in aging and long-term care, advocacy groups and other stakeholders that, let's say, like might represent providers, and also consumer advocates, the different kind of stakeholders who are really key within the political system. Approach of snowball sampling or chain link sampling, starting off with trying to figure out who is someone that I should talk to, and then having them give me a list of other people who I should talk to, and so forth, until you to reach as many people to think that you have enough information. That's a little tricky in this situation because I was only there for 3.5 months, but 25 people was a good amount from the amount of time I was there. These were in-depth interviews that lasted anywhere from an hour to 2 hours in length, where I just kind of sat down and asked them a semi-structured set of questions about policy and the issues. And then to just kind of also give a corroborate what was said, also looked at a lot of policy documents and statements released by organizations publicly, try to look at, make sure that they were similar as much as possible with what was actually said in the interviews. A little bit about the demographic issues. Certainly, I mentioned this earlier, that we as a nation are aging. Currently, we have about 40 million individuals over the age of 65. It's about 14% of the population. By 2040, that number is going to grow significantly to approximately 90 million people, or 21% of the population. In Canada, it's slightly even more intense growth. We're going from 16% to actually about 25%. A population being over the age of 65. I mean, that in and of itself is certainly an important issue to be cognizant of, but in terms of long-term services and supports, it's not necessarily that most important issue. It's actually really individuals who are over the age of 80, where the risk of needing long-term services and supports becomes most likely. And so within Canada, right now there's about 1.5 million individuals over the age of 80. But by 2050, this is going to grow significantly to just over 4 million individuals, to about 11% of the population. And that is a significant growth and just something to be cognizant of when thinking about the policy issues. A little bit about payer sources here in the United States. The vast majority of long-term services and supports are actually provided or paid for by public sources. The Medicaid program, generally for low-income Americans, tends to be the largest payer of long-term services and supports, joint federal-state program. I also include Medicare, though, in this because the Medicare program does provide some funding for nursing facility benefit. There is some debate whether or not to actually include that in long-term services and supports, but I think it should be, especially since when added together, it's 23% of all spending. Other public sources, Older Americans Act provides some funding as well, and the Veterans Administration as well certainly does. Private insurance is actually an interesting point to note, that it's only 9% of all spending in the United States on long-term services and supports approximately. It is just not as big of a player within long-term services and supports as it is within more acute medical services. And then certainly out-of-pocket expenditures are large too. But I don't think this fully captures certainly all the costs. This is kind of the National Health Expenditure Account's data on spending, but there's certainly a lot of unknown costs and additional costs from providing long-term services and supports that are in no way included in all of this. I mean, there's certainly been some interesting research by a couple different organizations recently on that as well, including the RAND Corporation, I think, did a study last year on valuing the lost economic output, for example, of caregiving in this country. In Canada, basically the provincial governments are the main funders of long-term services and supports. There is some federal funding, federal transfers that are given from the federal government to provinces to help fund that, but the province themselves are by and large the largest funders. Private insurance is even less of a component in long-term services and supports in Canada than is in the United States. Maybe 1% of the population maybe has a long-term care insurance policy. And then once again, families and individuals are really probably bearing a lot of costs in actually providing care. I think it was also helpful to give a little bit of background on the Canadian health and long-term care system broadly. So when most of us think about Canada, we think about the Canadian health system being a kind of government-financed care system, which is largely true for acute medical services and for physician services and so forth. But long-term services and supports or long-term care is not included in that. There was a kind of seminal piece of legislation several years back called the Canada Health Act that kind of established the Canadian health system. And long-term services and supports were completely left out of that. A lot of other things were also left out of that as well. Prescription drugs were not originally included in that. Although prescription drugs that are provided within a hospital setting are covered now under the Canadian health system, but those outside of it are not. So what's really happened is each province has taken on the responsibility of putting together some sort of system and paying for it. And that looks different by province. What's happening in Ontario is certainly different from Quebec or from British Columbia. A little bit about the long-term service support system in Ontario specifically. You have three levels of government that relates to health and long-term services and supports. So overarching, you have the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care, that province-wide funder of all health and long-term care services. They give this money to these more regional layer of government called Local Health Integration Networks, or LHINs. There's 14 of them. They're geographic in their layout across the province. And they also set some policies and then also then dole out their money to the next level called Community Care Access Centers. And originally when they were set up, there was about 43 of them, but they have basically been consolidated down in the last few years to mirror the LHINs that are at these 14 regional areas. So you have these different levels of government that are involved. And someone who actually needs long-term services and supports would go to their community care access center to determine their eligibility, basically, for services and get enrolled in a program. So I think it's also kind of helpful to explain that there's quite a bit of public involvement in long-term care homes or nursing homes and also in home care in Ontario. I was just kind of put together like a few pieces of information about the two different care systems. Basically, when someone goes to a community care access center or get enrolled, if we're looking for institutional care, it's solely provided through the community care access centers. The nursing home that they may live in or the care home that they live in receives all funding through that, basically. Whereas with home care, you may receive some funding through the government, but also many individuals pay out of higher either for-profit or non-profit care agencies to provide kind of in-home services. So you have the care that's delivered within long-term care homes entirely funded by the province, whereas I would say only part of the services are funded for home care. But what's different about Ontario, at least from the United States, is that the care and accommodations have been separated. So while the care is completely paid for, the accommodation or the room and board is not. So there is a cost share that an individual may have when they move into a care home. It's on a sliding scale of income, though, as to how much or what share of that cost it is. So most low-income individuals in Canada would have no contribution, but if you're a higher income, you would have a contribution. And then when someone is looking at where they want to live or where they would be, they're have selected up to 5 different homes in different areas, perhaps. And when there's an opening in a particular place, they theoretically could then move there. Difference, the community care access centers are, on the other hand, with home care agencies contracting with them to provide services. The majority of people who are within the long-term service and support system in Ontario are receiving home care. There's about 700,000 individuals that received care there, whereas in there's probably about 70,000, about just 10% of the population that was in long-term care home or living there, residing there. Just a little bit on the cost. Someone who's a high income who might have a shared room, it would be $58 Canadian per day, or about $1,774 a month. That's about $1,300 in the U.S., but it would be more if you wanted your own private room, but it's on a sliding income scale, and most Canadians or Ontarians pay less than that. And some pay, a large portion pay none at all. And just for comparison, the median daily rate for a semi-private room in the United States is about $200 a day, or for a private room, about $250 a day. So costs are potentially a lot higher here than they are in Ontario. So some observations from the actual research. I would say that the most important thing that I saw from my interviews was that the political institutions actually do matter. And that's certainly true anywhere, but the fact that you theoretically have an ability to implement policy a lot faster in a parliamentary system, which is what Canada has, versus the United States presidential system. And certainly the elections matter. While I was actually in Canada, Canada had their federal elections, and a new government was elected. Justin Trudeau was elected prime minister, who's part of a very long dynasty of Canadian politicians, the Trudeau family. With that election, it's just known that there's going to be quick, large policy changes, and they have the ability to do that with a significant majority within their parliament. But I'm talking about the federal level, but this kind of mirrors at the provincial level, that ability, the institutions are much more almost fluid in a parliamentary system. The ideology and cultural piece, too, is very important. I found that the most interesting thing that I kind of found was when talking to people during the interviews about how proud, and I would say, of the Canadian health system everybody was, and how they believed very much in that universal nature of the system for health. And that was very interesting, and I think that that does say a lot about to what extent ideology does impact policy. It's kind of hard to determine at what exact level that does. That's always the tricky part when looking at ideology, but certainly there was this kind of universal agreement that that was important. And then the other big issue that emerged with the cost concerns, and that has been, I think, a major barrier, for example, with home care in Ontario to expanding it previously, that you know, this is potentially expensive, even though it's cheaper than other potential ways of providing care, but increasing the health budget is always a challenge and an impediment to policy change. And there was lots of discussion about that and how you might increase funding. Those were the three things I really honed in on in terms of my findings. There were a number of challenges and limitations, I think, of this work. The first was that it was really a very short time frame. I was really there 3.5 months. And that is not enough time to do, I think, a cross-national comparison. Certainly had a good opportunity to really look at Ontario, but it just wasn't quite enough time, perhaps, for the study. Secondly, was access to key individuals. I did talk to a lot of people who were very knowledgeable and involved and very helpful, but wasn't always able to reach everyone that I wanted to speak with. And that's often the case when trying to work and interview policy elites in any case. And then third is the issue with quality of research with policy elites around data reliability. Sometimes individuals may leave out key details. They may want the record to reflect on them well, so they may give you a slightly skewed version of what has happened or their involvement or whatever. So you have to be careful with that and try to corroborate what they've said. And you can do that by carrying out other interviews or trying to look at other, perhaps, written sources as well. So those are just some challenges. I don't think that any of them have made this a real impediment to the findings, but just something that were there. And then just some final questions and thoughts that I might leave you with. What might a better long-term service and supports financing system look like? And what are the connections between long-term service and supports and the wider healthcare system? I'll leave you with those thoughts. Thank you very much.
The Health and Healthcare Forum is produced by Roberta Hall. Theme music was composed by Laurie Childers and played by Laurie Childers and Kent White.